from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. It is Friday. The weekend looks lovely. It's going to be 80s, maybe up to 90 degrees in a couple of spots. I know some of you are like, that is too hot. Not for me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Travis Mayfield, and Jack Stein is with me as well. G and Ursula enjoying some time off this morning. We have a ton to get to this morning. Michael Medved in studio right now, so let's get right to what's new at 10.
What's new at 10?
We have this massive news this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, the issue of abortions now back to the states. Michael is here, host of Michael Medved's show on KTTH. I just want to get your immediate reaction. When this news broke this morning, how you feeling?
Knocked over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things that for years and years, and I would describe myself, I'm pro-life. And for years and years, there has been this expectation that someday maybe we could get back to judicial sanity where it doesn't look like the Supreme Court is making decisions that ought to be made by the people's elected representatives, et cetera, except what this means to most people and the way I think most Americans are going to react to this is that not that it corrects a mistake from 49 years ago, but that it repeats the mistake, which is basically making sweeping change that impacts everybody's life and making that based upon the opinion of six people and six people who were never elected, six people who aren't accountable. And that's a difficulty. Look, I'll tell you what I'm worried about is I'm an institutionalist. I have great respect for and love for the Supreme Court as an institution. It's one of the things that makes America so special and wonderful. But the Supreme Court's going to be under real assault. I believe that at some point, and soon probably, Biden and leading Democrats are going to start calling for expanding the court, for court packing, adding three justices that Biden would get to appoint. Now, and then the question becomes, how do those justices get confirmed? And the political ramifications of this are profound. And we've known it's been coming because we had the leak, and the leak appears to have been accurate. But I think this is chaos for our political system. Anyone who feels this is something to celebrate, it really has to look around the country and the level of conflict and upset and uncertainty that is going to prevail here. And so how do I feel? Frightened. Concerned.
Michael Medved, how do you feel about Clarence Thomas's his concurring opinion calling for the court to consider overturning the right to contraception, same-sex marriage, privacy in the bedroom? That to me, I think it's on a page, 112, 113. That to me is pretty disturbing kind of I know it's only an opinion, but it's still pretty disturbing.
It is. It's insane. And again, he's talking about overturning the Griswold case from 1965, which first established a constitutional right to privacy. And really to say that, no, it was a mistake to establish that right to privacy. By the way, I think they're right on there is no constitutional basis. This was invented by the court, but it's become so much a part of the fiber of American life and of our judicial system. And it also gives rise to people who make those awful slippery slope arguments. That's the reason that And this at a time when some of those slippery slope arguments were put aside on the issue of guns with the overwhelming Senate vote and the House vote coming maybe even today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of good news to me, not because I think that the gun bill is going to solve anything or save tens of thousands of lives or anything like that, but just it shows that as sometimes people can get away from being on separate mountain peaks shouting at each other and actually do something that isn't a panacea but makes things a little bit better. That's encouraging.
Yeah, speak and listen to each other in a way that it feels like we can't these days. It felt like the Senate really was doing that, and then we get this decision that feels like no. I mean, can I just ask your honest opinion?
Sure.
Like, you know Republicans, you know the party philosophy. Is Justice Thomas actually signaling that they would be moving in the direction of dissolving my marriage?
I think he is speaking for himself alone. I don't think there's any other support on the court. I mean, you can't do that. First of all, because your marriage has already been blessed by the government.
Yeah.
And you can't say, okay.
No take backs.
No, it's impossible. And there are 500,000 couples, same-sex couples, who are legally married now. And you have 75% public approval. You have a majority of Republicans who say they approve of the change in defining marriage. So, look, we are so... this is a very tough time for the country. We have almost 80% now of people who think we're headed in the wrong direction. You think that this decision today is going to add to that, maybe? And that's very unhealthy for the country. And again, it's I do hope that one of the things that of course would be constructive right now would be for some of those states that are more pro-life to take a look at those trigger laws, because some of those trigger laws call for prison terms for people involved in abortions that until today had been legal. And what they need is something like Justice Roberts, if you read what his concurring opinion was, was so right. There was no need to do this. The smart thing that I think conservatives and thoughtful pro-lifers would have favored would be, okay, approve the Mississippi law, because the Mississippi law said that they were going to allow abortions up to 15 weeks, but no abortions allowed after 15 weeks, with exceptions for the health of the mother. And I believe they had exceptions for rape and incest, too. I'm not sure about that. But the point is, 95% of all abortions in the country today, 95% are performed before 15 weeks. So the pro-life movement has had great success against late-term abortions, which most people do not support.
Right.
And
many people who say they're pro-choice don't support that. Yeah.
Right. And you don't need to, because, again, 95, most all of abortions are early in pregnancies. The other thing is, I don't know what happens here if any of these states try to attack the morning after pill, abortions on a medical basis, because according to some figures, about 54%, that's the Alan Guttmacher Institute says that, 54% of all abortions are actually not surgical. They're taking pills. And what do you do about that? Because trying to regulate that at this point.
Right, are they opening mail? Like,
No. It's very chaotic. And I've read Justice Alito's opinion, his majority opinion, twice. It's very well written. It's very logical. And I think you can say he's right about the point of the argument. But at some point, you have to not only look at right and wrong in logical terms, you have to look at consequences. And the consequences here are punishing for the country, and I think they're going to be very punishing for the conservative movement and for the Republican Party.
Michael, I said something in the last segment where I said I think that the GOP is kind of shooting itself in the foot here, celebrating this decision, because there has been this talk about this red wave 2022-2024. I think that this is going to mobilize voters like nobody's business. I'm curious if you would want to add on to that.
I suspect you're right.
Yeah.
I do. And again, the whole nature of American public life right now and the way people feel about the country, there is no such thing as a sure bet in politics of 2022. And one of the things the Republicans are in the process of doing, Eric Greitens, who is a thug and a creep, and has his wife is charged him with beating up his own little kids who he wants to have custody of. And again, was expelled. Well, every Republican in Missouri wanted him to leave as governor when he was governor. And now he's running ahead for the Senate. And it's that kind of candidate that I think is going to make it unlikely that the Republicans, they still have a chance to take the House, but it's getting tougher and tougher to see that they take the Senate. Herschel Walker isn't working out as such a great candidate because they begin to compile. They started running ads already about Herschel Walker and things that he has said that aren't exactly accurate.
It's a kind way of saying
Well,
it.
Saying that he graduated as valedictorian from the University of Georgia, he didn't graduate.
Yeah. Or how many kids does he actually have?
Four.
Unclear at this moment. Yeah, maybe. Maybe
well,
today.
Boris Johnson has that too. By the way, Boris Johnson, a conservative prime minister of Britain, I've talked about this court decision, the Dobbs decision, as a disaster.
Yeah. I'm wondering, so look, I'm a liberal, I'm pro-choice, so like I am prone to catastrophizing when we hear things like this. I want you to maybe pull me back, I don't know. Is this talk of a national ban on abortion that that in liberal circles, they're like, that's what they're coming for next? That's what'll happen if the Republicans take the Senate and the House, and like that's where they're headed next, a national ban?
Well, again, I think that's an effective campaign tool, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's because
so I am catastrophizing.
Oh, absolutely,
okay.
You are. Because again, people here in the state of Washington, we had legalized this state had legalized abortion before Roe.
Yeah,
and we were one of the first states to do it. California had done it before Roe. New York had done it before Roe. The what people are talking about now is sanctuary states. Are already setting up. I know Governor Hochul in New York, who was absolutely hysterical and over the top over this issue. In terms of actually impacting people's lives, I think it will make it more difficult for people to get abortions if they live in a pro-life state. I think there are about 20 states so far that already have either trigger laws or they have laws with serious restrictions on abortion, like Mississippi.
Yeah.
But again, Mississippi, it gives you free access, not free access, but it gives you almost unlimited access to abortion in the first 15 weeks. And that again, and you mentioned this, Travis, that there are lots of people on the left who also think that late-term abortion should be discouraged at best, if not outlawed entirely.
Yeah.
So that's the point. There's so much stuff like this gun bill. There's stuff people can agree on. You know, Americans on neither side, most Americans are not crazy. You know, and again, we have allowed the really very extreme and irresponsible segments of each party and each coalition to dominate the discourse. And that's a terrible thing. I have a piece in Newsweek today about judging other people to their benefit.
I love
giving
it.
People the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Preach that. I love it.
Well, again,
I'm reading that right now.
Well, it's a part of Jewish tradition.
Yeah.
And going back 2,000 years. And there's a phrase called Dan Lakov Sechut, which means judge people in their favor. And that's something that we could use right now. It's old, but very contemporary.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time on this busy, busy day. Travis, I feel like we've been doing radio for 5 hours at this point in time.
It feels like it.
Do you feel the
same? I know. We need to take a breath.
Woo. There's a good movie.
Oh, let's tell us about the movie.
Yeah. Is called Jerry and Marge Go Large, and it's with Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening, two of the finest actors in the business.
It.
Very funny.
Okay.
True story about a guy who figures out how to break the lottery and make a lot of money.
And with the two of them together, does he have his big beard?
No.
He shaved it off for this.
Yes.
Okay.
He does. But he plays a retired factory worker from who's also a mathematician in a small town in Michigan, Everett, Michigan.
I love it. Your recommendations never go wrong.
Thank you. This one, everyone is going to love.
Michael Medved. Thank you very much. The Michael Medved Show on KTTH Radio. This is Cairo News Radio. We are back. We're going to take a breath. I think we're going to do some non-row news at the bottom of the hour.
I'll be listening.
Yeah.
All right. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Jack Stein, Travis Mayfield sitting in for the crew. Travis, are we going Title IX or are we going rent pushing couples to move in together? What's your flavor?
Let's start with the rent subject.
Okay.
Because I think this is something that we can talk about. And to give us a minute to take a breath, how does that sound? Because it's been a morning.
I'm
having the vapors
right?
over here.
Yeah. Okay, so you want to take this one, Travis?
Sure.
The rent pushing more couples to move in together?
The idea comes to us from the New York Times this morning. Apparently, more and more couples, because of the rising cost of rent, are choosing to shack up earlier and earlier, maybe before they really would have otherwise, so they can save some money, they can afford an apartment in a place where they want to be. So the Times interviewed a number of folks. There was one couple that had been dating for 6 months when they decided to move in together.
Oof.
Yeah, I know. And then another couple that apparently they were interviewing them about this process and they'd moved in together. And they said to one of the couples or one member of the couple, why did you do this? And the member said, oh, well, it's because of the cost of rent. And apparently the other member of the couple was like, it was? I thought it was because we loved each other. And then they decided they weren't going to cooperate with the reporter anymore because they needed to go sort things out. It's rough
so
out there.
How long before you moved in with your partner, Travis?
It was a year before we moved in together. I mean, I was definitely sleeping over at his house in the months beforehand, living in sin kind of a thing. But, like, I kept my... I kept my apartment, though, for a good year. Thank you. Appreciate that. That was good.
It's got the dual meaning.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, all of it. All of it.
So I, too, is living deep in sin with Sarah. So, Sarah, the only reason that Sarah moved in with me, we weren't even planning on it, but we had been together for about a year. And then the person that she was living with started dealing heavy, heavy drugs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She said, he's going to get raided.
Oh,
and they're going to, right? She goes, and they're going to get me for a conspiracy or whatever it is, because I know that this is going on.
Yeah.
And so I said, do you want to take the spare room that we have in my apartment? And she said, yep, I'll do that. And then she moved in, and it's been that way ever since. But, it wasn't like a big, like, did you have the discussion where you sit down and you go, I really think that maybe we should move in? It was just a natural
I mean,
flow.
I think it was basically like, I was like, when was the last time I actually went back to my apartment? And I was like, has it been a month that I haven't been back there? And then we were like, does it just make sense for us to live together? And yes, it does.
Chef, what about you? What about you and the missus?
Let's see. I think it was probably about a year. About a year after we started dating that we moved in together. And I think, you know, most people get to that point where it's like, hey, we're paying two rents here. Does this make any sense? I think the issue that I have with this is as we see housing get more and more expensive, you're going to see people be forced to live together.
Yeah.
And you're making a living decision because you should not be making your living decision based on your finances. Hey, it makes financial sense for us to move in together. Hence, we'd save a ton of money. No, you should move in together because you love each other.
Right. You want to make a life together.
And you believe that there's something stable that's going to last a long time. The problem is you're going to have a lot of people who literally cannot afford to break up. right? If you need $8,000 to come up with first, last, and deposit and all your moving fees and, you know, the furniture to outfit the new place in order to break up, you're going to have a lot of couples that are locked in together. Or you're going to be living in a studio with someone who wants to bring dates over. That's even worse.
Yeah. So this is, that was my thought. Like, what if... Because Sarah and I'd spend a week over at her apartment, or she would spend a week over at my apartment, and slowly over time, we realized that we could live together and habitate and have separate and then also coexisting lives. 6 months is not a lot of time to really get to know somebody, and in my mind, it just creates this... Like, all of a sudden, you move in with the person, and then you realize that you don't like them.
Yeah.
And you don't actually want to be around them. That has got to be an awful feeling for these young people.
There was actually the article in the New York Times, the very last couple that is highlighted, these two guys, their boyfriends, at the beginning of the process of being interviewed by this reporter. Yeah, we did this, and yeah, it's a thing, and yeah, it was because of our finances. And the last paragraph in the New York Times story is like, and now that the story has been published, they're no longer together.
Yeah.
Travis, you brought up living in sin. let me ask you though, as a parent, you know, when your children get old enough to that age where they're, you know, oh, we're dating, blah blah, and they come to you and they say, hey, I've been dating someone for 9 months and we're moving in together. What's your reaction? As a dad.
Well, I mean, I obviously can't prejudge in any individual situation, but I will tell you that my kids are already exposed to this. My sister and her boyfriend, they have no intention of getting married, and they've been together for, like, I don't know, 10 years. Sorry, Hillary, if you're listening. I can't even remember how long you and Uncle Mike have been together. But, like, Uncle Mike is part of the family, you know, and they lived together. They lived in Seattle, then they moved to Bellingham together. Like, he's part of our life. So, like, my kids see that. So to them, that isn't a weird thing. So I kind of hope that because they've been exposed to, like, you know, what different families, different couples, different lives look like, they can just make good choices for what they want. So I hope I won't be an insane dad who's like, you can't live together until you're married. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not like that, but I'm not making any promises.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, because we have two bedrooms in my apartment, my mom in her mind believes that every single night Sarah and I hold hands.
She might be listening.
We kiss on the cheek and then we go into our separate bedrooms. She refuses to believe, because she's so deeply religious. She refuses to believe that we would actually sleep in the same bedroom as a couple. And I was just like, I'll just let my mom keep thinking that way.
Yeah.
I'll just let her
mom
keep...
do her thing.
You know, there is an upside to the whole, you know, lack of affordable housing, and that is, around the world, we're seeing this epidemic of loneliness. And just think, there are so many more of us that are being forced to live with our parents, to live with a partner prematurely, to have roommates. Look, in 20 years, there will be no one in America who's lonely, because
loneliness.
We'll all be stacked deep like cordwood in studio apartments.
We can't afford loneliness. It is 10:41. This is the G and Ursula Show. What are we doing next? Are we doing scenarios?
Yeah, let's do some scenarios.
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show on a Friday morning. It is 10:47. Travis and Jack filling in for you this morning. Let's get straight to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Dear G and Ursula Show, I have a professional dilemma that I need your advice on. I'm a 33-year-old professional woman with a master's degree who interacts regularly with executive-level administration, and there's something that keeps happening in my interactions with mostly men that's driving me crazy. People comment on my age all the time. Things like, oh my gosh, how old are you? You look like a baby. Or, are you old enough to be in this meeting? Ha 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 ha. And they laugh. It's always bothered me, but the other day, a director made 4 separate comments in one meeting with other members of the administration present. He was dismissive with me and all his other comments and acted like it was cute that I was even there. It absolutely gutted me. I have a very important job, I take it very seriously, and I'm proud of the work that I do. I feel undermined and dismissed when people talk about how young I look. I'm also furious with myself because I didn't stand up for myself and say something, but I don't even know how to say, stop talking about my age, in a professional manner. Am I being overly sensitive about this? What should I say if this happens again? Travis, I'm going to toss to you first.
All right. No, you are not being overly sensitive. That is a completely inappropriate thing for people to be talking about. I mean, you feel demeaned, which means that it is demeaning. So look, I also don't think you should beat yourself up for not having the perfect response in a high pressure situation where the director is in some meeting. Like, that's a tough place to stand up for yourself. That said, like, it's not too late to stand up for yourself. I've been in situations where people have said things or done things, and after we're off the air or later in the day, I've like found a quiet spot to take them aside and just be like, I just wanted you to know. I try to use I statements and say, like, I felt this way when this happened, and I thought you'd want to know this so that, like, you know, I don't want it to be a thing, like, so that you take the onus on it. But you can be honest about it and try to maybe educate them. Now, if they continue doing it after that, then you can go to HR. Like, you can file a complaint. You can stand up a meeting and be like, we had this conversation. Then you don't need to be nice anymore.
You guys share something in common. A love for I statements in fraught situations.
I go straight to HR. I'm going right to the top. I'm not
seriously
putting myself in a circumstance. Yeah, no. Okay, so here's why. I had a circumstance a while back. I don't want to name any specifics, but a guy was trying out for a radio station that I worked for. And I had literally just met this individual, and he was all excited because he was going to be a board op and he was going to get some airtime. And then he made some comments about a person that I was working with at the time. It happened to be a woman, and he made some comments about their physical features. And I said, you know, I know that person. And then he took that not as, oh, I should be embarrassed about the fact that I just commented on this person's body. He took that as an invitation to ask me my opinion.
No!
And
no!
And so I was like, I'm going to go to MGMT about this. I'm not even going to entertain this. I'm not even going to... I am not going to suffer fools in this moment. So I went right to management. They went right to HR. And lo and behold, that person did not show up the next day. And rightfully so, right? I don't have a lot of tolerance for people who don't understand what healthy boundaries are. And when it gets to a certain level, like persistently commenting on somebody's appearance, that to me is a line that should be dealt with the higher ups. That's not really an interpersonal thing at that point in time, because that just shows that person's level of immaturity in my assessment.
Let me push you a little bit on this, because sure. I think this is kind of a gray area for a lot of folks. I think that there are a lot of people who may not be conscious that comments about age could be construed that way. Some people could say, oh, you know, I just think you look really great, right? That was actually a compliment. Why would you take it any other way? I mean, we comment on what Travis is wearing almost every single day of the week.
And I covet the comments.
I'm going to knock myself down a little bit, though, on this position, because when it comes to acceptable comments about someone's body, their personality, etc., you would never say, oh my gosh, Travis and Chef, you guys are going bald. Wow, you really don't have a lot of hair. Oh my gosh, you look so old, right? You would not say that, but still, even on this show, hey, we've got Nick over there in the other room, and this comes up all the time. Hey, it's the young guy over there. Let's get the young guy's opinion. Nick, let me ask you, has that ever made you feel, and be honest, has that ever made you feel uncomfortable or dismissed?
There's sometimes, like, I mean, feeling like the youngest guy here, there's always situations where I feel like there's a case where someone's trying to patronize me or lead me into a direction where I might not necessarily need to know any of the facts that I might already know about. And it's just like, why do you need to treat me any different just because I'm quote unquote younger than you or even less experienced? But if I'm going to get into my rant here and really get my gears grind, you want to talk about getting some respect? What's this woman have to do to get some decent see at this place? I mean, if they can't even remember her age and assume these folks can, like I said, patronize their youth, where is the line drawn? Soon they won't even remember if it's Sarah or Susie.
What's your name, little girl? What's your name?
Man, maybe she ought to fire back at how old and gray everyone is at work or something, just to have some retaliation.
She said she was struggling for a professionally appropriate response, Nick.
Maybe
you're like, bring
the
flamethrower. Yeah. You got to stand up for yourself. I totally give her permission to stand up for herself, but also, if you can do it with kindness, it's never wrong, in my opinion.
Maybe a little PSA for the folks like me who, prior to reading this, felt free to comment on folks' age who are younger than me.
She can do discreet jabs. She can figure it out.
Yeah. Well, like, look at me. Like, I make fun of John Gurley, I think, every single day for his steroid use, because I use steroids and his age, right? So, I mean, it's the kind of thing where if you're chummy with somebody, I think it's acceptable, but if you're not chummy with somebody, it's not so acceptable, right?
Yeah. It's always about intent, right? You know, are you trying to demean somebody or are you trying to love somebody? Let's all try to love somebody a little more.
And demean John Curley just a little bit more.
A little bit more. Okay, I can be on board with that.
A lot bit more. How about that?
All right.
We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, what are we doing? Agree to disagree.
Yes,
this is
going to
be fun. And Juul cigarettes, or Juul e-cigarettes, as well as a woman pregnant with two sets of identical twins. How are we going to agree to disagree about that, Chef? Babies are nice.
Maybe we're counting wrong. Oh, I don't think there's two babies. I think there's three. I don't know.
Okay. All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.